Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Let the filibustering begin.
Welcome to Nerd Party.
Hello and welcome to Filibuster here on the Nerd Party Networks. I'm one of your hosts, Lee Hutchison, and returning once again is Carlos Miranda. Carlos, welcome back.
Thank you for having me back, Lee, especially after our Picard chat, which was just a couple of weeks ago. I'm honored.
Yeah, we left it on a note of, like, the door is always open for you, Carlos. We've had you on a few times now, a special guest star, in my opinion. We had a discussion that we are all in lockdown at the moment. We're putting out some extra podcasts, we're doing interviews, and I pose it to you, Carlos, blank canvas, any topic you wanted to discuss, if you wanted to return, you could just pick it and we would do it and we would chat about it. Do you want to tell the audience what topic you've picked for today's discussion and why?
Yeah, when you kind of gave me that blank check, I knew immediately that I wanted to talk about the character of Seven. In large part because, one, I think years and years and years ago, you and I joked about doing like a deep dive on a couple of characters, and I said we had to do Seven, and then we did our a Deep Space Nine followed by a Voyager kind of recap. And so it's always been in the back of my mind, and then obviously Picard came and went, and Seven I thought was one of the best components and one of the best elements of Picard, and I know that a lot of people had issues with her and her character and the way she was portrayed, but for me, I absolutely loved it. And so it was very clear when you very kindly gave me that blank check that there was one thing I wanted to like kind of geek out with you about, and that was the character of Seven of Nine.
Now, I think before we dive into sort of our discussion, let's kickstart this with a brief snippet from one of our kind of most recent interviews. So here's a brief snippet from one of the key writers and creators of the Seven of Nine character, Voyager producer and writer Brannon Braga. He obviously played a key role in sort of developing this character of Seven of Nine. Did you expect her to make this sort of huge cultural impact that she did? I mean, here we are 25 years on, you know, it's the character's still making waves, it's kind of part of the big campaign behind Picard as well. Did you expect something that you played such a key role in developing and kind of shaking up Voyager to have such a huge impact on the franchise altogether, really?
Well, it certainly wasn't my intention to, I mean, anything you do, I'm blown away that people still talk about these Next Generation episodes. I never could have predicted that this would be the case. With Seven of Nine, I just wanted to add a character to the mix that was going to provide a foil and a dynamic for each cast member would be unique. Everybody had their little relationship with her. I'm pleased that the character remains in the cultural consciousness. I think you have to credit Jerry Ryan with doing an amazing job. These kind of Star Trek-y characters, whether they're Spock or Data or Seven of Nine, they're hard to do believably, and she did a great job.
So there we go. So there's Brannon Braga talking about the origins of the Seven of Nine character. So Carlos, what was your first introduction to Seven of Nine, and was it a character that gripped you in that first episode when she appeared in season 4 of Voyager's opener, Scorpion Part 2?
So, you know, I didn't watch Voyager season 4 live because my family had moved to the Middle East. My dad's in oil. He's a mechanical engineer, but he focuses on energy, and growing up he just worked in the oil industry. And so we had moved to Saudi Arabia right after Voyager season 1. So I watched season 1 live, and then we moved to Saudi Arabia. And so I was able to watch Star Trek about a few months behind everybody else. And it was on the American Military Channel. They used to do Wednesday nights. They used to play Deep Space Nine followed by Voyager. But it was always several months. It was the new episodes of that season, but it was always 3 or 4 months behind. We didn't really have access to kind of the early internet in Saudi at the time. So, you know, I knew that there was this character coming on from everything from like Star Trek Monthly and, you know, various kind of Starlog and those kinds of magazines that I would buy at airports. And so I was really, really excited. But I was really late to the party when it came to the character of Seven. So by the time I finally saw her character on screen, I had read, you know, everything that I could get my hands on when it came to like magazines and comics about the character of Seven. So I felt like I had this like unbelievable anticipation about this character. And I think when she, you know, I think I think Scorpions Part 1 or 2 are two of my all-time favorite episodes of Voyager. And I, you know, there's no shock there. I think a lot of people love those episodes, particularly episode 2. And I love her, you know, the gift, the continuation of that storyline, like the exit of Seven, I'm sorry, the exit of Kes, the real kind of introduction of Seven as a character. So I was I think to me, I had this very like unbelievable sky high anticipation for the character because I was several months behind everybody else. And again, it was pre-internet before you could download things and things like that. So I was, by the time I finally got to see the character and by the time I finally got to see those episodes, already I was predisposed to love her. And to be honest, it didn't disappoint. You know, I think that there was, and we'll talk about this in greater detail, I think that there were some episodes at the very beginning where they were really trying to find her feet. And there's that episode very early on where she has that like really weird kind of cringy like flirtation scene with Harry Kim, and like I think that's like the episode right after the gift, and so I think that there were a couple of episodes where they're trying to find her and her voice and who she was, but ultimately, when they finally nailed it, and it isn't just Jeri Ryan's performance, which I think is excellent, and you know, especially how she grows into the character as the seasons progress. But to me, you know, I think I was smitten not just because she's beautiful, but really as a character, I think she's one of the best characters in all of Star Trek. So I had this weird anticipation, and it did not in any way, shape, or form disappoint.
One of my kind of first memories of 7 or 9 is almost kind of runs a little bit parallel to you. I was 10 in 1997 when we were introduced to 7 of 9, and my dad worked in the oil industry as well. And I remembered one day he came back from his job, and he had this like huge plastic folder filled with print offs. He had just gone onto like the Star Trek website because we didn't have the internet in our home at that stage, and he had just printed off like character profiles and information about like the Voyager crew and cast, sort of about season, just as season 4 was about to come on or had just started. And one of them was 7 of 9, and I think we were sort of maybe midway through season 3 at the time in the UK. And I was like, "Who the hell's this 7 of 9?" And sort of just like reading this little print off, basically this character profile from a website, just looking through, going, "Oh wow, this seems really interesting. I am dead keen on that." And it wasn't until the VHS release, probably sort of maybe March 1998, I remembered sort of going into the Virgin Megastore at the time, and I had the choice between Deep Space Nine 6.1 with the, you know, the first episodes of sort of this occupation arc of Deep Space Nine, or the first two episodes of a brand new season of Voyager. Now, naturally, I would kind of go towards Deep Space Nine. That is my favorite show. I love the finale to season 5, but I also love the finale to season 3. But the idea of seeing a brand new character come into Voyager was really appealing. You know, you had the character of 7 of 9 on the front cover. You had this Borg cube. I was like, you know what? This is the VHS I'm going to pick. And I took it home, and I was just immediately gripped because it felt like something kind of Voyager was missing at the time. It felt like this was similar to its Worf getting jet, you know, appearing in season 4 of Deep Space Nine. Someone that would upset things a little bit, have different and dynamic relationships with all the cast and crew. The Borg were one of my favorite species at the time of kind of that show kind of kicking off. So it was all really very exciting, and I think 7 of 9 and Jeri Ryan really opened up an exciting kind of avenue for fans. And it, I think from probably season 4 to the end of 5, maybe kind of with some of season 3 in there as well, I felt that was the peak of Voyager. It was, you know, fantastic entertainment, you know, really good episodic television. And I think that a lot of that came from the emphasis on sort of Jerry Ryan. It added tension that had been missing in the show. We didn't get this sort of Mackie tension that we were always kind of expecting, but we got this tension between Seven of Nine and Janeway that perhaps filtered through from the actors a little bit, if the rumor mill is to be believed. So yeah, it was a really exciting time, and it was something that I think was really welcome at the time in the series.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. I think that tension, and you and I have talked in detail about, I think, kind of Voyager's biggest missteps. And even though, you know, we're both massive Uber Star Trek fans and I love Voyager, I think Voyager is a show that I'm far more critical than I am of Next Generation and Deep Space Nine, and even to a lesser degree Enterprise, just because I think Voyager has such potential. And don't get me wrong, again, I love it, and there are so many great episodes of Voyager that I absolutely adore, but it lacked that tension that we were promised at the beginning, that was so naturally there, but they just kind of glossed it over for the most part. And it took the character of Seven, you know, there's obviously the tension between Janeway and Seven, which is wonderful, one of the best aspects of the show. But I think also, like, her relationship with someone like Torres, which is, I think, is vastly underrated. You know, they liked each other, but they didn't like each other. And I think all of their interactions right through the end were always fantastic. I think her relationship, obviously, with the Doctor is great. I think another relationship that is not often talked about is her relationship with Tuvok. You know, they have these wonderful moments. And I think and I think Jerry and Seven was kind of like the spice that the Voyager stew needed at the time. And I don't necessarily think that Worf was needed for Deep Space Nine, because I think, you know, to me, Deep Space Nine can make no mistakes in many ways. But I don't think Worf was necessarily needed. However, he did make the show better. There's no, you know, I think the Klingon storyline in season 4 of DS9 and what Worf, how Worf gelled so beautifully with the characters, and Michael Dorn is on video, you know, and on record saying several times that his best stuff that he ever did as Worf was on DS9. And I think that's definitely true. But I think Voyager desperately needed some kind of jolt after season 3, and the character of Seven definitely provided that.
What was it about sort of some of those kind of episodes of Seven of Nine that got you excited? There was something I was kind of debating actually with Bran and Braga when this episode will drop a few weeks after this discussion, which we had yesterday, where obviously before Discovery got dropped onto Netflix all around the world except America, Netflix released what were the 10 most streamed episodes that was out. And it was a really interesting thing, because for me and you, if we were to drop a list, I think it would maybe have one or two of those in there, but I think a lot of people were surprised. So if you've never heard of it before, the list was at number 10 was The Next Generation, Clues. 8, 9, Voyager, Time and Again. 8, Next Generation's Q-Hu. And then this is where things start to get interesting, and you can sort of perhaps see the appeal of Seven of Nine and what she brought to the show. At 7, The Dark Frontier, a feature-length episode. Episode 6, The Gift. 5, Scorpion Part 2. 4, Scorpion Part 1. Then it was Best of Both Worlds Part 2 at 3, then Part 1 at 2. And then at 1 was the Endgame finale. So you can clearly see that, looking at that strict data, that's removing all people's opinion, that Scorpion seems to be a gateway for people to go into it, that they'll watch 1, 2, and then they follow it through into The Gift. So she makes such a strong impression that The Gift, which is a good episode, but I doubt it's one like Yes is Enterprise that most people are going to go, hey, let's get that on. That shows that clearly there is a follow through, and the success of that character is probably highlighted in especially Dark Frontier Part 1 and 2, and sort of the Borg, which she probably represents in sort of the most popular one, Endgame. So I always find that quite a fascinating sign of kind of the success of the 7 of 9 character.
I couldn't agree more. A couple of years ago, a couple of friends of mine and I were looking to potentially start, this is a completely different tangent, but like completely looking to start a data analytics business around data in popular culture. And that's a topic for a completely different discussion. But long story short, I remember this, it was around the time that Netflix released this top 10 list, and I remember the infographic. And when Picard was first announced, I remember tweeting and having a conversation with a lot of people, some of which no doubt are your listeners, on Twitter about how, even though we knew nothing about the show, I was like, given the data, the Netflix data, and what we know of what works, because obviously something like Picard and Star Trek in general is both a creative and a financial enterprise, no pun intended, right? So when it comes to the finance component of it, you know, you want to have some interesting new elements on a new show to get people excited, but at the same time, you want to kind of do callbacks and bring in elements that people love. So, I mean, I remember saying very early on, not necessarily that Seven, I've never said that Seven or kind of, you know, I'm no Oracle, I didn't know that Seven was going to be back, but it was very clear that the Borg, given that it was focused on the character of Picard, that the Borg were going to play an important component in Picard. Like, that to me was never a surprise. I remember that teaser trailer when you first see the Borg cube, I was like, yeah, well, obviously, not only is one, from a creative standpoint, the Borg is, you know, obviously a fundamental component of Picard as a person and as a character, but in addition to that, you know, they're good for business. First Contact, the successes of First Contact, when you look at the list of the top 10 episodes of Voyager, almost every single, I mean, on Netflix, almost every single one of them has to do with the Borg, right? I was surprised that they brought Geri back, but not surprised, not shocked, right? Because she's a safe bet, right? And so I think it was really interesting that that Picard went down that route, but it, by no means was it truly surprising when you stop and think about it.
When you kind of think, I want you to kind of probably think back, Carlos, to before Picard in a way. When you got to the end of Voyager, were you happy with where the character of Seven of Nine was? Did you feel that they developed that character the best that they possibly could? And did you feel that there was anywhere left for them to go if she ever came back in a movie, a TV series, or something like that?
I was happy with... I was never like a Chakotay, you know, Seven shipper.
That implies there is someone out there that would be.
I think there are, man. I think there are. But, you know, partly because I think the character of Chakotay was really underdeveloped. I'm not a big Chakotay's not in my top five characters of Voyager, much less top, you know, 10 characters in all of Star Trek type of thing. So I think that was a weird creative choice in many ways, but I am happy with the character of Seven. I think that the character of Seven is a Star Trek character for the ages, right? Because unlike, you know, people compare her to a Data or an Odo, she is very much that other. But what's fascinating about her is that, you know, she was kind of this idea of exploring her humanity was very much forced upon her. And I think by Janeway, very, very openly and blatantly forced upon her. It was never her choice. And so I did. I think that her character arc is wonderful. And I think that that's why I loved her appearance in Picard and her kind of Seven as Robin Hood storyline in Picard, because it was such a natural extension of who she was at her core. I think that, you know, if it hadn't been for Janeway, you know, she was always, Seven was always very, I wouldn't say eager, but her natural inclination was to do the quickest thing in any situation, what she thought was the most efficient thing in any situation, and that usually involved firing upon someone or destroying something, right? So I think to me, it's very... it's very easy to see an arc where a character, where those edges are beginning to be softened by a character like Janeway. But then in the absence of Janeway, and when you throw in a whole bunch of kind of traumas, like what happened with Icheb, and other things that happened to her in between Voyager getting home and when we see her in Picard, it's very natural to see her kind of fighting for the Rangers and being who she becomes. So going back to your question, I think that her character arc from the first episode of season four right through the end of season seven, kind of those four full seasons, is a wonderful character arc. And I think one that unfortunately not many other characters in Voyager got, especially when you compare them to characters on Deep Space Nine and to a degree on TNG because of the films. But I think her character arc was it was and is arguably one of the top three best things about Voyager.
What were some of the highlights of her run on Voyager for you? Were there, like, we picked off a bunch of episodes that are popular with streamers on Netflix. What about you? What are some of your favorite Seven of Nine episodes and maybe some of your favorite Seven of Nine moments?
So, you know, my two of my absolute favorite episodes. I mean, I love Dark Frontier. I watch Dark Frontier like every 3 to 5 months, like every all the time. My wife is always just like, is that Borg episode that you like with Seven and the Queen? And like she has, no doubt my wife has seen that episode like 10 times, right? I love Dark Frontier. And to your earlier point, Lee, I think that Voyager really hit its stride. I think the best seasons of Voyager are seasons 3 and 4. I'm sorry, no, that's not true. Seasons 4 and 5, right? With like season 7 and notable mention. I think there's a lot I loved in season 7 of Voyager. But what makes seasons 3 and once you make seasons 4 and 5 of Voyager, I think the best is that is the introduction of Seven and how she shakes everything up and the Borg threat. I love that we always knew, even though they don't mention the Borg very early, you know, very very much in their earlier seasons, we know that they're in the Delta Quadrant. We know they're going to run into the Borg. We know that the Borg are these amazing villains. And so, like, that anticipation of building up and getting to the Borg was always there on Voyager. And I think that finally getting to them and seeing Seven is was such a wonderful payoff. But going back to your question, two of my favorite kind of Seven moments are, one, in the Omega Directive, and two, Someone to Watch Over Me. So those are two of my all-time favorite kind of Seven episodes. The former, not necessarily like a classic Seven episode, even though she plays a very important part in the story, and the latter being, you know, a full kind of wonderful bottle show focused on Seven and the Doctor. So I think in the Omega Directive, you see this, like, really focused, all about duty, all about scientific discovery, seeking perfection, and kind of doing, you know, and again, that rebellious streak that's always in Seven, that's wonderful, that none of the other kind of Starfleet, even Maquis characters, with some, you know, B'Elanna has a lot of attitude, but she's not necessarily super rebellious, in, you know, when it comes to following orders. But Seven was always willing to kind of do her own thing until Janeway kind of came into Stellar Cartography to really kind of like slap her on the wrist, right? So I think Omega Directive is one of those phenomenal episodes. And I saw yesterday TrekCore tweeted that it was the anniversary of the show, like the 30th anniversary or something ridiculous, whatever it was, right, of the show yesterday, and or 25th anniversary, whatever it is. And I think Someone to Watch Over Me is one of the most beautiful. I mean, that to me is definitely a top 10 episode of Voyager. And it's arguably a top 20 episode of Star Trek for me. I think I love those very kind of quiet moments. And I think that the dynamic between her and the Doctor and what the character goes through when, you know, all the dating and the holodeck is absolutely wonderful. So I think, you know, there's a lot of episodes that I can talk about, and all the big ones, whether it's Scorpion, Dark Frontier, Endgame, you know, they're the big ones for a reason. But I also love those kind of more quiet bottle show episodes where the episode really highlights who she is and the dynamic between her and a couple of other characters. Because Seven is most interesting. She's interesting as a character, but she's also extremely interesting when you're playing her off another character, and it just so happens that, you know, the holy trinity of Voyager, and when it comes to characters, became Janeway, Seven, and the Doctor, and they're the best characters on Voyager, without a doubt. They're also the best actors, I would argue, but I think the three of them were amazing, and so when you had Seven playing against one of those two, it's when you had magic.
Why do you think Seven of Nine was a breakout hit, not just probably for Voyager, but I think at the time in the 90s, maybe sort of less so outside of kind of fandom now, Seven of Nine was very appealing to probably people to give Voyager a go. You obviously, Brannon Braga had this idea of bringing a Borg onto the crew, and then someone like Rick Berman was like, but she's got to be a babe, for example. Do you think that sort of kind of tied in almost probably with the lad culture of the time? When I think of sort of Seven of Nine, I think of sort of the characters from Spaced, you know, that would kind of that would appeal to those people to tune in to Voyager. Why do you think she became sort of a breakout cultural hit, probably in a similar vein to the Datas and Spocks?
Well, I think originally, you know, on the surface, I mean, you talk about the characters on Spaced, right? Tim, i.e. Simon Pegg's character, had that Seven of Nine poster in his bedroom in the show, right? If you go back to, not in the first season, but when they came back to the second season, in his bedroom, there is the classic iconic Seven of Nine in her, like, badass, like, metallic, you know, silver cat suit, right? I think originally that was like, you know, obviously that has Berman written all over it. You need to get that kind of, you know, and they used to refer to her as the Borg babe before they had one, right? Like in all those interviews and things like that. And I think that obviously Jeri Ryan is beautiful and she's sexy and she's all of those things, but that's not what makes the character interesting in any way, shape, or form, right? Yes, she's again, she's pretty, but like it's not what makes the character. The fact that like it's I think that why the character worked is that she was kind of, you know, and I think Kate Mulgrew's original, you know, you hear all the drama, and I've heard Jeri Ryan talk, you know, everybody can just Google it and hear some of Jeri Ryan's like interviews from like 20 years ago, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, when she was really like honest to what it was like. You know, I feel bad for Kate Mulgrew in that way, right? Here's a show that was meant to be, you know, spearheaded by this woman captain. And then they, you know, they need to shake it up. And so what do they do is they bring someone literally in with, like, you know, with an amazing figure with, and they put her in a metallic cat suit that was so tight, you know, like she bruised her rib, didn't she? That's the reason they had to get her out of that metallic. She was always supposed to be in that metallic silver one, but I think I remember reading that she bruised some ribs and that it was really hard for her to get in and out of it because it was so tight. But that's not what makes the character interesting. What makes the character interesting is the fact that she became like the Data and the Spock, and you know, it's not the right term, but she became that other who always commented on humanity, right? But from a very different perspective. Obviously, Spock was half human, and so he was able to kind of code switch between the two worlds when, even though he was obviously a Vulcan, but he understood the other, or at least could pretend. Data longed to be human, and she was human, but she wasn't. She was also Borg, and so I think that the child of two worlds played it so well. And let's not forget, Jeri Ryan was and is a phenomenal actress. Like, she really is. You look at some of her, you know, you look at some episodes, and I'm blown away at what an amazing actress she is, right? So I think that that character, I think originally you had that Berman kind of ratings, that kind of studio intervention where it's just like, you need to, you know, we need to hit a demographic of 18 to 34 year old men, and they're the key demographic that watch Star Trek, so let's give them like a sexy Borg in a tight suit. And actually, had you not had an amazing actress like Jeri, that's what you would have gotten. But the reality of it is she was able to just elevate the material from pretty much the beginning. And I think the writers picked up on that. And I think the writers then started giving her, I mean, don't get me wrong, she was always in a cat suit, right? I think in Relativity is the only time that you see her in a Starfleet uniform, right? Or something.
You know fine well that it is. You don't pretend that you're not like a full-on nerd. I know it, you know it. It's Relativity, which is in that blue one.
Okay, it's Relativity. You're right. It is Relativity. I think that's the only time you really see her in anything but a skin-tight catsuit, right? And even when she was wearing dresses, it was always super, you know, super form-fitting. And so I think that she, to her eternal credit, I think the original inclination was that, yeah, let's appeal to kind of the lads and give them something sexy and pretty to look at. And in reality, she came in and blew everything away. And I think the writers really picked up on that. And her dynamic with the Doctor and her dynamic with Janeway is a testament to that. And I think a lot of that tension that existed at the time between Kate Mulgrew and Jeri Ryan obviously must have been hard behind the scenes, but I think it played so well on screen. You know, there was this maternal quality to Janeway, but it was like not a child. It was like maternal to like a very rebellious teenager, right? And that's one of the best aspects, and it became one of the defining components of the show. And I think her acting, the writing adapted to it, and really elevated the character.
Obviously, she's returned in Star Trek Picard. What was your initial reaction when you watched that trailer and Seven of Nine appears at the end of it? Can you remember how you felt and when you first watched it?
Okay, so I was at a client's, a very important client of ours, at a dinner party at their house, right? And the Picard trailer, I was kind of, I it was not appropriate for me just to get up and watch the Picard trailer. But I knew it had been out because I had peeked on Twitter and had seen all these like crazy reactions. So I pretended I had to go to the bathroom and I got up to go watch it. And I just locked myself in the bathroom to watch the Picard trailer. But I didn't have my headphones, so I couldn't listen to it very loudly. And I sat there and I just watched the Picard trailer, and I watched it twice. And the moment she came on screen, so it had been ruined for me because I had seen several people being like, Data and Borg and Seven, oh my God. And so they were going, it was, you know, that was the chatter on Twitter. So I was like, oh my God, Seven. So the moment I saw her, I knew she was going to be on the trailer, which was unfortunately kind of ruined for me. But it was just, it was, like I said earlier, it wasn't shocking that Seven was on. She's a safe bet from both a creative and a financial standpoint. She's a safe bet. And if you're not going to bring back many Next Generation characters at the time, we didn't know what other Next Generation characters were going to be brought on. Having Seven back made a lot of sense to me, right? And I always wanted that scene, which I thought we got in Stardust, that was so well done in Stardust City Rag, right? Between Picard and Seven when they're talking by the transporter, and they admit to each other how hard it is to kind of be fully human after being assimilated, right? And I thought that scene was for the ages. I just thought that scene was phenomenal. So it wasn't surprising that Seven came back. It wasn't shocking. But I was so pleased because she's one of, I think, again, she's one of the best elements of Voyager. I think she is she broke the mold for that, from that kind of Data Spock character who really gets to comment on humanity. So I was really, really, really excited, and I really wanted to see where they were going to take her, because even from the trailer, you saw her as being very relaxed, a very human, very much her, you know, but talking back to Picard in a way that wasn't really Seven. But of course, it shouldn't be Seven because 20-something years have passed.
I remembered when I first watched that trailer, I was coming back from London and I was on a really quiet train. I was in the quiet coach, and I remembered sort of, I knew the trailer was going to drop while I was on this long train journey back to Scotland. And I remembered sort of just following the panel, and I was like, come on, trailer and stuff. I was just refreshing, and I was going through like the heart of like the English countryside at the time, so like 4G was at a minimum, and then the trailer dropped and I was like, right, here we go. And I think it took about 5-10 minutes because of this stupid thing that the Star Trek CBS page has, where it's like region locked. So I'm just like waiting for something somewhere to post up. I remember just watching it and just being like blown away, excited, so many questions. And then I would just drag the video bar back to the start, watch it, go onto Twitter, talk about it with people, watch it again, drag it back, engage with more people on Twitter, like screenshots, everything. It was just so exciting. But I think before we can continue, even kind of dive into even sort of further about Seven and Picard. Let's hear from Jeri Ryan herself when I interviewed her on the red carpet of the Star Trek Picard European premiere about her return to her iconic role.
Jeri, what was that phone call like when they call you up to say, we want you to come back? Was it one of excitement, nerves, get lost? How did you feel?
My experience was a little different. I heard about this first 2 years ago at the Hollywood Bowl, drinking champagne with a friend of mine, as we do in the summers. And about two or three glasses into the evening, he decided to say, okay, here's what I'm thinking. I want to bring Seven back. And I laughed and said, you know, it's funny, it's really funny. And he said, no, I'm serious, here's what I'm thinking. And he pitched me sort of the ideas that they were thinking of what she would be like now. And it was honestly really intriguing. But I didn't think anything was going to come of it because people pitch ideas in Hollywood all the time and nothing happens. Cut to Creative Arts Emmys last year. I'm lined up backstage to go on for Star Trek to get an award. I'm behind Alex Kurtzman. And he said, oh, yeah, I understand you talked to James. Yeah, we've been talking a lot about Seven in the writer's room. I was like, you're actually doing this? I had no idea. So it's pretty cool.
Good to have you back.
Thank you.
So there we go. We have Jeri Ryan on our Star Trek Picard Voyager 7 of 9 discussion. What a thrill that is. So, Star Trek Picard, were you happy with the performance and the return of Seven in the episodes that we got with her in Season 1?
In one word, absolutely. I know there's been a lot of backlash, and just because it was so unexpected, and I think so... In some ways, we all have a love for Seven. I've never met anybody that doesn't like the character of Seven, right? And what she did for Voyager and how she spiced things up and how she elevated the material and elevated the show. And so I can kind of understand, you want the best. We love these characters. We want the best for them, right? So I think when the characters, when we're reacquainted with these characters or meet them again at a later point and their lives haven't gone the way we would have liked because we want them to have the best, I understand that kind of hesitation. But the reality of it is that I immediately bought the Seven of Nine as kind of Robin Hood type story, right? And so I was there for it completely. So, I mean, at the end of... Episode 4 of Picard, where she beams into, the transporter pad of La Sirena, and her and Picard just looks at her and she says, "You owe me a ship, Picard," and he just says, "Seven of Nine," or whatever, or vice versa. It just blew my mind. It was just wonderful. And then in the next episode, where you really see her and Picard kind of go head to head, and they have these moments. I thought the character was handled so well. And I remember that episode, at the beginning, the kind of the teaser for Star Trek City Red, where you have Icheb, and this is where having Kristen Bear on the show has been such a blessing for fans, particularly fans like us. I'm only a couple years older than you, Lee, but we grew up with 90s Trek, right? Like, that to me is comfort food, like TNG, DS9, and Voyager, right? Like, that to me is like the holy trinity of television, and that to me is just comfort food, and I love those shows. And to have someone that's like one of us co-creating Picard and injecting Picard with, I mean, not that Picard had, there were a couple of nods to DS9, but I was shocked at the number of Star Trek Voyager references that were littered throughout Picard, right? Forget, you had Icheb and obviously Seven, but the musical, the music cues, it was amazing how much Voyager was part of Picard. And so to have, to kind of have, one, to have Seven back, but two, to have her, to know that she had been, obviously we there are big gaps in her life that we haven't been told yet, but to know that she suffered like these horrible traumatic kind of episodes, and she became the character that she became, I was just there for it because, one, I thought it was totally believable. I thought that they really understood the character of Seven. And to me, if you would have said, if Seven and Nine experienced things like the death of Icheb in the way that she did, and Jaisal's betrayal and things like that. Would she become this character? 100%. So to me, even though it's not what I wanted for the character, because you want the best for these people because you love them, it was totally believable that Seven would join a kind of, you know, this kind of, again, Robin Hood is the best way to describe it, and kind of fight with her own kind of, you know, a la Batman, vigilante justice in order to right the wrongs in the galaxy.
One of the things that's been interesting is the discussion of Seven's sexuality, is that we are, you know, in Voyager, we saw her in relationships with men, and that's been kind of grown upon in kind of other episodes in sort of Star Trek Picard, where it's heavily implied that she was in a lesbian relationship. We see some, maybe in a bit of intimacy with Raffi at the end of the season. What do you think of that development of the character and the addition to her character?
Yeah, I mean, I see so many things on Twitter, because obviously, we're, you know, Star Trek Twitter, I try to keep my Star Trek Twitter, and I think most of, like, 98% very positive. But you do see things, and you're just like, come on, people. It's the 21st century. By that point, everybody's going to be bisexual. You know, like it's just a spectrum. But the reality of it is that it's not a thing. To me, the fact that she had relationships with women and with men, I don't know. It wasn't even a thing. I think that the reality of it is that Seven is probably, you know, if she was a real person, she would probably define herself as bisexual or whatever the 21st century equivalent of it is. And I think that in Voyager, she was... You know, she was basically a teenager. She was experimenting, and she had relationships with men, and then probably, you know, post-Chakotay, she was like, this isn't working for me. I buy that completely. But it was funny because it was never an issue. And there's been so many shippers, I think, over the years that are very much, like, into this kind of weird Janeway Seven relationship. I never thought about it that way, ever, not even once. I thought that Janeway was very much a mother figure to, like, a rebellious teenage daughter. And that's the lens which I will have always and will always look at their relationship. But to me, it's not surprising, and it's genuinely not even an issue. I thought that it was perfectly believable. I don't think that there, you know, I think that the historically, Trek has always had such, like, a, you know, like, a rigid heterosexual, like, attitude towards his characters, and I think the reality of it is that that's not the case. And I love things like in deep, you know, in things like DS9, especially the DS9 doc, where you have Andrew Robinson talking about Garak's sexuality and him wanting to basically eat Dr. Bashir, you know, and you look back on it, and it's wonderful to kind of see that like sexual tension and not being kind of confined to this idea of kind of heterosexual relationships. So to me, it was not an issue. I think I wish people wouldn't make it an issue. I think it detracts from it. I think it makes the character of Seven far more nuanced, far more interesting. And the fact that she had relationships with men and with women, you know, great.
When we leave the kind of Star Trek Picard season one, we have Seven of Nine on the bridge, feeling like she's now going to be part of this crew going forward. Where do you kind of feel Seven of Nine's going to go next? Do you think she's going to become sort of a regular on this crew, you know, contributing in some way or another? Or do you think it's going to be something that she's going to be kind of dropping in and out of the series?
Well, you know, I thought that you and I and Duncan talked about the Picard finale. My least favorite episodes of Picard, I love the series, you know. I genuinely loved it. I just finished Una's book about 3 or 4 days ago. And I just bought the comics, so I'm looking forward to reading the comics. And I'm revisiting Picard. So I'm a big fan, and I still can't believe that thing exists. I just can't. I did not love the season finale of Picard. I thought the episodes 9 and 10 were by far, for me, the weakest. I thought it was a very odd ending. I loved the motley crew component to it, that this was not really a crew, that these people were just put together because circumstance and a mission and people were getting paid and things like that. So I don't know. Part of me feels like this was all of them getting off that, like, you know, ridiculous season one TNG-esque kind of synth planet, and them going off, not necessarily on an adventure, but to, like, go back to Earth or whatever and drop Seven off. So I could see them go. I don't believe that Picard season two is going to be a, I don't believe Picard season two is going to be this, like, the crew's on an adventure, you know, looking, you know, exploring strange new worlds type of thing. Not at all. So I don't think it's going to be a crew. Do I want the character of Seven back? Absolutely. Absolutely. I think her and Picard have history there that needs to be further explored. I think her and Soji could be great foils to each other in some ways, right? So I definitely want Seven back. I'd like to see this relationship with Rafi, which I'm not against in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, I just, that sequence, that final scene of Picard season one and the scene prior to it, how much time passed, right? So I just have a lot of questions about that season finale. But I definitely think they need to be bringing Seven back. I definitely love to see other characters of Voyager. You know, they've talked about Picardo coming back. So I think that it's interesting. I don't believe that they're going to be this crew. I don't think Picard is that show. And in fact, if you told me that Picard season two was going to be a bunch of like courtroom drama type episodes with Picard fighting for like synth justice, I'm here for it because I there's nothing I love more than like lawyer Picard.
So have you got any final thoughts on Seven of Nine as we kind of wrap this up, Carlos?
No, I mean, I think you know, we've touched upon it. I think that she when she was introduced, she did a great service to Voyager. She made that show stronger. She made that show better. She made the character of Janeway more interesting, I think. And I love Janeway. I love the character of Janeway. And in fact, in many ways, I think that of all the Star Trek characters, even though I love Picard and I love Sisko, I think I'm most like Janeway. And I think that in fact, a couple of months ago at an all staff meeting, I talked about things I had learned about leadership from Captain Janeway, which went down really well with the company. But so I love Janeway, but I think Janeway's better because of Seven. I think the Doctor is better because of Seven. So I think that one, she had a wonderful arc, which I think really ran its course throughout Voyager. And I love the fact that when she was kind of introduced back into her lives, she was done so with like a jolt. It wasn't just Seven. Seven had gone through horrible things and now look at her. And so I think that, like, I think the character arc was brilliant. I think she could have easily been such like a one-dimensional kind of eye candy type character. And to Jerry Ryan's eternal credit, she like refused that. And she knocks it out of the park. And I think her popularity, you know, 30 years later is testament to the fact that it wasn't just one-dimensional eye candy when it could have been. It started off as that, but then it became this nuanced, layered portrayal of a character, and also a character from a species that we were so fascinated by, right? So I think the character is, you know, one of my all-time favorite Star Trek characters. I think the arc is wonderful, and I'm excited to see where the character goes in the future.
Obviously, we've had the pleasure of you on a few podcasts talking about Star Trek, Carlos, but this isn't the only place you can kind of hear or read you kind of talking about Star Trek. Where can people also, if they're looking to hear more about your kind of thoughts on Star Trek, where can they hear and read your work?
Well, I'm like a Star Trek uber nerd. I've just had my first article published on StarTrek.com. I write pretty regularly for Trek News. I'm on Trek Ranks quite a bit, Jim's podcast. And obviously, I'm always geeking out with you, Lee, either in person or on your podcast. So I think, you know, and if people really want to connect, the only thing I love as much as Star Trek is coffee. And so my handle is Double Mac. That's MACC. because double macchiatos are my go-to kind of drink. And so I'm really active on Star Trek and kind of general geeky Twitter. So by all means, people should connect with me there.
We'll also have you back for another upcoming Star Trek episode. So yeah, we'll definitely have you back, Carlo. So thank you very much for joining me, and thanks to the listeners for tuning in as well.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.